Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. Archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Green Magic, Green Medicine with Susan Weed. I'm Daniel Michael, the founder and co-creator of the Main Street Universe Radio Network, and would like to make a few brief station announcements and then bring on our amazing host, Ms. Susan Weed. I'd like to remind everyone that it's a network of six shows right now, but what we're going to start doing is doing some rotating shows on Thursday evenings and on Saturday evenings. So, or they can be day or evening, to be honest. And so what we're going to do is have once a month, or just once in a while hosts, most likely once a month, people showing up, some who have been with us before, some who are new. So this will really expand our range and expand who's involved with the Main Street Universe Radio Network. And it'll help us just get bigger and bigger and bigger and grow and grow and grow. And their friends tell their friends and all that sort of thing. And some of them are, speaking of friends, are old friends of ours, including Mary Phelan, who's coming back. And Mary Phelan has been a Main Street Universe host before for a short stint, for a few months. And she's local to this area here in Northern Virginia. And she's been a television host here for a show called Telepathic TV for 14 years with her friend Neville Johnston. So I just wanted to make that announcement. And that tomorrow night, our guest at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Main Street Universe is Star Cassis, who's a hoodoo conjure practitioner. So join myself and Janice Arway. Then Friday is Activating Compassion with Jesse Ann Nichols George. And her time is changing. It's no longer going to be midnight. So we have some updates. I think hers is going to be around 7 as well, because she's on the road touring and it's hard for her to do a midnight show. Then Sundays, of course, returning is Darren Bouquer, who's a reader at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Then on 10 p.m. Eastern is Science of Light. On Monday, Randy Goldberg is our Vedic astrologer as well as a Western astrologer. And again, there's a whole slew of other hosts going to be joining us as well. And of course, Kevin Baird's going to be bringing his show back, but probably again once a month on either Saturday or Thursday. So I just wanted to get some of those updates out there that we are going to be dramatically expanding. It's just that they won't all be once a week hosts. Some of them will be once a month hosts, or more often if they just fit it in. So tonight you're listening, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, to Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Ms. Susan Weed, and I see her in the queue. I'll go ahead and bring her on.
Green blessings. Green blessings. How are you tonight?
I am great, and green blessings to you. And I'm sort of back in a different, slightly more steady work schedule. So some of the chaos that was going on in my life of driving around all over the place, chasing money, not that everybody out there in internet radio land needs to hear my personal problems, But now things have, like, stabilized. I'm sort of on a regular schedule that, yeah, sometimes I still work more, but it's nothing like it was before where I was running around contractually and chasing money, including in other states, which was getting ridiculous.
Well, I am glad that your sources of income have pulled in closer to home. Because I don't think any of us like a long commute.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's like the jobs are... Now, they're about 10, 12 miles away now in the neighboring town of Arlington. Sometimes they're even here in Fairfax. So it's, by construction standards, that's nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, the woods around me over the past few days have really started to sparkle with color. How about where you are?
I wouldn't say with color yet, but there's definitely been a little bit of some browning that has started to happen, and even some red looking starting to happen. But it's, I think you're probably further along there than we are here in Virginia.
And the red is especially interesting. One of the first of the trees to turn red is sassafras.
Mm.
And the sassafras is a very distinctive tree because it has leaves of at least three different shapes. Some people say four different shapes. Are you familiar with sassafras?
Not particularly.
You've heard about it.
Oh, I've heard of it, I'm saying, but I'm not educated on its qualities.
Yeah. But you have heard of it because it's a fairly popular kind of old-timey remedy in Virginia and further south. Yeah?
Sure, I've definitely heard of that.
Yeah, it's like kind of a granny remedy for the wintertime. And usually what the books say is to dig up the sassafras root. And the sassafras root, and it's actually the bark of the root, because the root itself is kind of woody, but there's a kind of more flexible outer layer on the root, and you can peel that off and get that root bark. And sometimes it comes in big hunks, and it's colored red. It's not like a beet red or a tomato red, but more kind of like a sandstone red. Like a Four Corners red, like a big cliff red, that kind of earthen, reddish, brickish color to the sassafras, a root bark.
Tar is that color.
And, yeah, and the leaves, too. The leaves on the tree turn, as I said, bright red, one of the first of the tree leaves to really turn red. And so that makes them easy to find. Because you can go out starting any time now and look for them. I just took my granddaughter to her hip-hop class at the gym, the little gym. And as I was pulling into the parking lot, in front of me was a little copse of woods with lots and lots and lots of sassafras. Now, during the summer, you couldn't tell the sassafras were there because they were pretty small trees. None of them were over 8 feet tall. Their leaves had turned such a bright red that it was really easy just to walk out into this little grove and pick a whole bunch of sassafras leaves right there. I started picking the sassafras leaves because I live further north where sassafras is not as common. Down from Virginia on down south, sassafras gets to be a very big tree, and she acts a lot like redwood. So there'll be a mother tree, and then out at the drip line, there'll be like a ring of daughter trees growing from there. And then out at those daughter trees drip line, there'll be a ring, a big, big ring of granddaughter trees and really big open woods that you can find sassafras going out for four or five and even six generations with younger and younger and younger trees out at the edges. And those were always the ones that I was taught to pick, was to go back from the mother tree, go back, 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 back till you came to the youngest ones, and to pick the roots from those. But here, further north, when we're up in the Catskill Mountains of New York State, we don't get that kind of grove of sassafras. We find, like, what I saw in the parking lot there was, you know, a sassafras here, a sassafras there. And that could possibly, if one of those got to, you know, to be the size of a mother tree, could start a whole sassafras grove there. But more, we get a lot of small trees. I think they're browsed pretty hard by the deer in the winter, and so they never get really big. And it was just loath to take the roots of them, you know. It's one thing to pull up a perennial plant by the roots and to, you know, be in that relationship of it giving its ultimate for me when there's thousands of them around, but when it's like one of the only ones, you're like, ooh. You know, so I asked the sassafras, I said, is there any other part of you that I could use besides the root? And the sassafras, a wind came up, and the sassafras showered me with leaves. I was sitting there in the autumn, and I thought, okay, I'll try that. And this particular autumn, not this autumn, but the autumn that I'm talking about, when the sassafras showered me with the leaves hadn't turned red. They had turned yellow, and so I was surrounded by these yellow sassafras leaves. And I took them home, and I stuffed as many as I could into a quart jar and poured boiling water over them. And the infusion that I made turned that brick orangey red color. I'm like, ah, oh, look at that. It's the same stuff that's in the roots, only not in such concentrated amounts. Well, I had these red leaves in the car when I went back to the little gym after going over to the big people's gym with my daughter, my granddaughter's mom. So we dropped my granddaughter off at the little gym, then we went to the big people's gym, and we came back and picked her up. And, of course, I had the sassafras leaves in my basket in the car. And so she said, what's that? She's always curious about the plants. I said, oh, it's a sassafras leaf. You can take one. And before we started the car, so she was able to lean over and grab one of the leaves, and she was, like, chewing on it. And her mom said to her, wait a second. And she said to me, is that okay? Is it okay if she chews on it? Is there something wrong with sassafras? And I go, well, it's true. There's an oily substance in the root bark of the sassafras, and if you extract it and then inject it under the skin of laboratory rats, bad things happen. And she laughed, and she said, I got it. All right. So I will not extract the oil from the sassafras root and inject it under my skin. I said, then you should be fine. And Micah Jean said, Simi and I could eat the leaf. We went, yes. As a matter of fact, many people have heard of eating sassafras leaf, but they don't really know that they've heard about eating sassafras leaf because they haven't connected the dots, shall we say. Like, I would suppose that you've heard of the dish from New Orleans and Louisiana called filet gumbo.
And I lived on the Gulf Coast for a while, so yeah.
Yeah. What's filet gumbo made with?
Well, the gumbo is, it's got the normal stuff and the andouille and the shrimp and everything else. And then...
And the filet.
Yeah.
And what's the filet? It's filet gumbo. Gumbo's a super stew, and filet is sassafras leaf.
Oh, okay.
And the sassafras leaf gives it color, and it thickens it. Sassafras leaf contains mucilages, as well as anthocyanins. And those mucilages are very helpful to all the mucous surfaces of the body, including the respiratory system and the digestive system. And then the anthocyanins are very potent antioxidants, and they're in things that have not the red of watermelon or tomatoes, which is carotenes, but that more purpley red. The cyan, of course, is blue, so the anthocyanins have that kind of bluish characteristic. We might even go so far as to say they're indigo, although they're not really. But they're not really purple, and they're not really red. They lie in that funny area in between there. And sassafras even is still a little more red than that yet. So there's probably some carotenes in it as well. And we can see from just these beginning things why sassafras is such a home remedy, such a granny remedy wherever it grows. I have a story that I'd like to tell about sassafras, because as I said, sassafras is unique in that it has different kinds of leaves. In other words, if I showed you a maple leaf, that's a maple leaf, and you'd be able to find a maple tree by looking at that maple leaf. Even if it was a Norway maple, it still has a maple leaf to it, although they're bigger and more yellow in the Norway maple, and so on, sugar maple, silver maple, and so on. But they all have maple leaves. Same thing. If I showed you a birch leaf, whether it was a black birch or a white birch or cherry birch or any of the different kinds of birches, all those birch leaves look alike. But sassafras, and there's only one sassafras, there's not different kinds of sassafras, sassafras has leaves that are different. Three, or some people say four, different kinds of leaves. Let's listen to this story, and we will get a good idea of what those different kinds of leaves are and why some people say there's three different kinds and some people say there's four. And this story has to do with a granny. It has to do with an old woman. As a matter of fact, an old woman and an old man. An old woman and old man had spent a very long time together. And they had a very happy and harmonious relationship because they were very grateful for each other. As a matter of fact, one evening after doing the chores, old man said to old woman, "You know, I am just about the luckiest man in the world because I have the warmest feet. It's cold out there tonight, but while I was doing the chores, my feet were toasty warm because of these wonderful socks you knitted for me. Thank you, old woman." "Now, I wouldn't want you to think that I was complaining or anything, old woman, because I'm not. I'm very, very happy and very satisfied. But I must admit my hands were cold. While I was doing the chores, my hands were cold. And I got to thinking, you know, I wonder if old woman could knit me socks for my hands." And he looked at old woman, and old woman looked at him. And she thought, and she thought, and she said, "Old man, I think I could knit you socks for your hands." And she got out her knitting needles and clickety-clack, clickety-clack. Old woman knit a sock for each of old man's hands. And they looked just like socks, except they didn't have the heel. And old man put them on, and he put on a big grin, and he went out and he did the evening chores when she was done with those socks for his hands. And when he came back in, he told her how wonderful they were, what a lucky man he was to have such warm and toasty feet and such warm and toasty hands. Well, this went on like that for quite a while, and then one evening, old man came in and said, "Ah, you know, there was a varmint out there today when I was doing the chores, and I couldn't get my finger in the trigger because I got these toasty socks on my hands, and there's no trigger finger in my toasty sock for my hands. I wouldn't want you to think I was complaining, but I got to thinking that, I don't know, do you think you could, like, knit me some socks for my hands that have a trigger finger?" The old woman looked at him, and he looked at the old woman, and she thought, and she thought, and after a while she said, "Old man, I think I can do that. I'm going to give that a try." And out came the knitting needles. Clickety-clack, clickety-clack. Oh, clickety-clickety, clickety-clack. Old woman knitted and knitted and knitted until at last she had, well, I must admit, you and I would call them mittens. One for each hand. A sock for his hand with a thumb sticking out on the side. One for the right hand and one for the left hand. And she took those other socks she'd knit for his hands, and she threw them right out back because she didn't need them anymore. Old man, he was just as happy as could be, and he told old woman how happy he was when he was done with the chores each night and how great it was to have warm socks for his feet and warm socks for his hands with trigger fingers. And then one night he said, "Old woman, I got to admit to you that while I really love these socks you made for my feet, you didn't really make me a trigger finger. See, it's my thumb that sticks up in there, and it's wonderful. And I wouldn't want you to think that I was unsatisfied or ungrateful, because I'm really satisfied and I'm really grateful. But I was just wondering, do you suppose you actually could knit me socks for my hands that had a trigger finger? Because there was another varmint out there tonight." The old woman looked at him, and he looked at old woman, and she thought, and she thought, and she thought. And she said, "All right, old man, I'm going to give it a try." And out came her knitting needles, clickety-clack, clickety-clack, clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clack. Old woman knit and knit and knit and knit until at last she had warm cozy socks for old man's feet with a thumb that stuck out one side and a thumb that stuck out the other side, too. And the old man was very, very happy to have them. An old woman took the mittens, we'd call them, and threw them out back because they didn't need them anymore. An old man was very happy to have his warm socks for his hands with the thumb on one side and the thumb on the other side. And he told the old woman how happy he was and how grateful he was. And then one evening he said, "Old woman, now look here. I wouldn't want you to think I was ungrateful, but look at this. Really, it's not a trigger finger. So I was wondering, just wondering, do you suppose, Nad, that you made me a sock for my hand with like three fingers? Maybe you could make one with five fingers, and then I'd actually have a trigger finger." The old woman looked at him, and he looked at old woman, and old woman thought, ooh, she thought. She said, "All right, old man, all right, I can do this." And out came the knitting needles, out they came, and she knit, clickety-clack, she knit, and knit, and knit, until at last she had a glove with five fingers, and she gave it to old man. That old man was very happy and very grateful, and she took those other kind of funny mittens with the thumb on each side, and she threw them out back. Now, this story has been going on for a long time, and so has winter, and all stories must come to the end, just as winter must come to the end. And when winter came to the end, out back, old man and old woman found a tree growing with leaves oval, leaves like right-handed mitts, leaves like left-handed mitts, and leaves like mittens with a thumb on each side. And they called it the sassafras tree. And so now we know why some people say three and some people say four. Depends on whether you want to call the mitten with the thumb one kind of leaf, or if you call it two kinds of leaves, because they do occur in both right-handed and left-handed forms.
Right. So, because this is something personal for me, is that I can usually actually handle the cold weather okay, except for being an electrician. If I'm working outside, a lot of the things I touch are metal, and my fingers get cold super quick. It's unavoidable. I have to stop, you know, I just have to wait for them. They just won't move, you know. And I'm curious if something derivative of sassafras is good for that, is for circulation.
Well, why don't you test it out? Keep your eyes peeled for those leaves in three or four different shapes, and as they turn red, and harvest yourself some sassafras leaf. The tree might throw them down on you, or you might have to go over to the tree and pluck them, of course. What was nice about the little grove that I found was that they were small trees, right? So it's really easy for me to get to the leaves of them. Sassafras can be very big trees indeed. Whereas if it's a really big tree, you have no choice but to sit underneath it and wait for the wind to blow the leaves down to you, because you're not going to be able to get up to where they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it would be wonderful for you to experiment in that way and let us know. What I often do is, as I'm harvesting leaves at this time of the year, I will take a bigger jar than a quart jar, usually a half-gallon jar, and really get as many sassafras leaves in there as I can, and pour boiling water over it, and let that sit out for 4 to 6 hours, and then refrigerate it with the leaves still in it. I don't even strain it. And then I drink that. And it's really refreshing, and it's kind of mineral-rich, and you can taste the vitamins in it. And then when all of that's drunk, I boil another half-gallon of water and fill the jar up again right over the same leaves. There's so much in the sassafras leaf that we get another really good, strong, nice, orange, bright-colored brew from it. As a matter of fact, I have found myself brewing my sassafras leaf over and over again, and I use that coloration to be kind of a key to me. Also, the amount of slipperiness. We talked about sassafras leaves dried and ground become filet, and filet makes the slippery in the gumbo, because if you got okra in there, you don't really need the filet, but you got the filet and the okra, you got a slippery gumbo. All right. So I can tell by the color of what I'm getting and the slipperiness of it when the slipperiness goes away. And when the color goes away, then those leaves are completely used up. But for a little bit of effort right now, this time of the year, I get a lot of good health during the winter. You know, there was a man who lived, oh, I guess about 150 years ago now, named Arnold Arendt, and he was a doctor. He was accused of poisoning people by the use of lobelia. It probably wasn't true, but he kind of got a bit of a about it anyhow, and decided to go out in the woods and just, you know, create the best healing system ever. And he wrote a book called The Mucusless Diet Healing System. And I often tease that before I die, I must write a book called The Mucus-Filled Diet Healing System. Because mucus is our friend. We've talked about this before, about what a friend mucus is to us and how there are no diseases caused by mucus, but plenty of diseases caused by lack of mucus. And sassafras, with all of its sliminess, obviously is good for the mucus. It's good for the mucus surfaces. In fact, we remember back to when we were talking about colds and flus last winter, that it's often the slowing down or the thickening and the drying up of the mucus that occurs during the wintertime with the heat on that opens the door to colds and flus. And so herbs like sassafras, and of course herbs like linden, which we've talked about a lot, with their wonderful mucilages, really keep the mucus in our bodies flowing and easy. And we can extend that to the synovial fluid. And usually if you're over 40, you know about synovial fluid, because knees are not designed to last forever, oh, that they were. And the synovial fluid, as we age, tends to dry up a bit in the knees and other joints as well. And we find that drinking things like sassafras and linden are incredibly helpful to get that fluid moving in the joint again, to get that synovial fluid nourished and more abundant at those joint areas. I know that I will forevermore remember my Qigong teacher telling us joints don't have any way to get blood, oxygen, or nourishment except by being moved. If you do not move a joint, it will not be fed. He, of course, said this just before we would begin this rather long series of kind of complicated movements, so that we moved every joint in our body before we began our Qigong exercises. But for those who don't do Qigong or have a Qigong teacher, sassafras will stand in well because it will help move the fluid. It will then make those joints feel more comfortable for you to move them, and you will be more encouraged to move your joints. So here's to sassafras, and here's to a winter free of winter miseries. That's that used to be the name for my class going into the winter, and I always loved, I thought that was the best name for a workshop, winter miseries. And my daughter has convinced me that nobody wants to come to a class about misery. And so she suggested that we call it winter readiness, which is, I think is a really excellent idea, although every now and then I slip and call it winter remedies. But sassafras is certainly one of the great fall tonics for moving us through this transition period and into the winter. Another fall tonic that we've mentioned, but not in any great detail, is goldenrod. Mm-hmm. And goldenrod is another favorite fall tonic of mine. Maybe we'll have a chance to talk a little bit about that next week, because, once again, our time is up.
Yes.
So I thank you all, our listeners, for being here with us on the Main Street Universe. And let's see, there's a link to the Wise Woman Bookshop right here on your page, yes?
Absolutely.
So if the listeners want to go and find any of my books, Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, down there, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way, Breast Cancer, Breast Health, The Wise Woman Way, or my big green book for everybody, the second Wise Woman Herbal, Healing Wise, just click through to the Wise Woman Bookshop, and I just published Unit 3 of my new Heart Health course, and they're standalone units. You can just jump in on Unit 3 if you want to. It's all about cholesterol, and I'm looking through the cholesterol myths, and that's available there. So lots of fun things happening, and we'll be back right here with Daniel Michael and the Main Street Universe next week. Remember, herbal medicine is people's medicine. It's the medicine right outside your door. Find some sassafras.
Absolutely, and I will get some, and I will experiment with it because I have a knee joint that is healing, yes, very well, but, of course, it can always use some help. It's not exactly full strength, but got pretty much full range of motion back, so I'm feeling really good about that. So I'll
All right. Good night, everybody.
All right. Thank you, Susan, and green blessings to you, everyone. You've been listening to Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Miss Susan Weed. We'll be back next week, Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a good evening.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.